is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, December 8th, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ben Freeman, director of the Democratizing Foreign Policy Program at the Quincy Institute, co-author with William Hartung of The Trillion-Dollar War Machine, How Runaway Military Spending Drives America into Foreign Wars and Bankrupts Us at Home. Also on the program today, Supreme Court hears Trump's bid to fire members of independent agencies. Take a guess how that's going to go. Senate expected to vote on ACA subsidies this week. It's expected to fail. Republicans starting to panic as Kushner joins the Skydance Paramount hostile bid for the WB. Trump suddenly says the Netflix WB deal could be a problem.
Huh.
I'm worried about antitrust.
Where's Lena?
FBI making a list of American extremists. And guess what? You're on it. If you're expressing anti-capitalism or anti-Christianity or anti-Americanism, if you're an adherent to a radical gender ideology, or if you are against immigration enforcement. Also on the program today, China's exports surge despite dropping shipments to the U.S. by a third.
Sounds like they're doing okay.
Trump to announce a $12 billion bailout for farmers, not coincidentally. Starbucks strike expands to 145 stores in 100 cities in this country. Don't buy there. Three-year-old is forced to serve as her own attorney in immigration court. And that boat that we killed all those people with a double tap back in September, according to the admiral who issued those orders, it was not headed to the U.S. And lastly, death toll in North Darfur, reportedly at least 60,000 in the last 3 weeks. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for joining us at the beginning of the week. It is
Fun Day Monday.
Yes. So fun day.
Yes. Hello, Sam. Yeah. Hello to everybody in the audience as well. Look at that. I don't know. I'm just trying to I'm workshopping different transitions, but
this is your like your happy Monday face.
It is. I'm slightly slow, you know, you catch up on the news on Monday. I feel like we really hit like the swing of things tomorrow, but
oh, all right.
So
I'll see you then.
We need to talk about marketing of the show.
Maybe a little and bit. If you're the one saying that to me, that's
a
problem.
Exactly. Yeah,
stay tuned for the advertisements as well, folks.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, to the extent that we have anybody listening to us anymore, welcome. We got a lot to get to today. The economy, again, we are we're still sort of like driving in the dark as we haven't gotten the economic numbers, have not really caught up. We saw the private payrolls numbers underperform dramatically from where people thought they were. I think there was a sense that there was going to be a 40,000 person job increase, and it ended up being, I think it was 30,000, negative 30,000. And again, this is not, this is just a private survey, so you don't get a full sense of things. But the other issue, of course, is that we have seen that the economic numbers, broadly speaking, don't really capture what's going on in the economy because we have such a wealth concentration. Black Friday was the biggest Black Friday of in history, but less in terms of dollars, but less products were bought. And unclear, which suggests less people buying stuff, but more concentrated in the hands of wealth. And here is Fox having to deal with some of like the other indicators that are coming up, like bankruptcies, which show how many companies are suffering, and presumably they're suffering because people aren't buying as much. And here is Fox doing their best to deal with this information.
Of high debt and even higher costs, mom and pop bankruptcies are surging, new record. Over 2,200 have filed under the subchapter, is it V or 5? I don't even know. Rules this year, up 8% compared to 2024. Oh,
hold on for one second.
Okay, so David, explain.
Just want to say that this is Fox Business News. That is why the guy did not know that subchapter 5.
Mom and pop bankruptcies are surging, new record.
Oh,
over 2,200 have filed under the subchapter
Twitter.
Is it V or 5? I don't even know.
Okay.
Something up with this video, so I'm going to, I was trying to play it from Twitter, but it wasn't letting me pause it there, so we'll just have to play it from here.
Okay.
It's like a relatively new way to declare bankruptcy. It came about in 2020. Is it representative of trouble among small businesses or not? What do you think?
No, it's not. And so I'm going to take issue with the entire framing of this segment.
okay.
Take you know, Brian.
I got up at 3 a.m. to write this segment.
It's not.
Give me breakfast.
Record bankruptcies.
What?
No.
It's an easy get out of jail card.
Yes. It. Okay.
What?
So it's only been around
five years. Four, actually.
Four. Marcus. That's Marcus in the background.
Yeah. Well, I guess he knows something about it, too. You can write the segment next time.
It is a category, by definition, that made it easier to go bankrupt. Marcus is nodding. Yes, correct. So why wouldn't this number go up if people took advantage of it who... It may enable people to go bankrupt easier, so
by the
very logic, it would go up because of the creation of this category. There's not enough data there even to say anything. It's like, yeah, record high, even though this category's only been in existence for 4 years.
All right, all right.
Okay. Let me just explain what she's trying to say here.
That was 2 whole minutes on a major news network.
Good luck with that.
Traditional business bankruptcy is Chapter 11. I'm sure people have heard of that. I hope. I don't know. Maybe they haven't. I grew up with a bankruptcy lawyer. So subchapter 5, it's a Roman numeral, V, for those of you who are
Vendetta.
Are on business channels. Subchapter 5 was instituted, and it has been around since 2020. You may not remember 2020. But the economy was shut down for half the year. And a lot of businesses went out of business, presumably could have used subchapter 5 at that time. The point is that in the 5 years subsequent to 2020, this is the highest number of mom-and-pop stores to file.
Since the once-in-a-lifetime pandemic that caused a major disruption to the economy and the closure of many, many businesses.
Now, there was also, you know, to be fair, there was payroll, you know, the PPP kept a lot of those businesses probably from going out of business at that time. Nevertheless, there wasn't a PPP in 2021, 2022, or 2023, or 2024.
Okay, if she's annoyed by this metric, how about this? Credit card debt reached an all-time high at $1.21 trillion at the end of the second quarter, for example. How month over month in the United States, delinquencies on car payments continue to rise to reach record highs.
Or you could even look to businesses that don't have access to subchapter 5 of chapter 11, because that is the small business, that provision is specifically the Small Business Reorganization Act of 2019. Year to date, in 2025, over 717 large companies have filed for bankruptcy, which surpassed the full year totals of 2021, 2022, and 2023.
It's just incredible to say that this metric is not, as she sputters this out, this is really uncomfortable to watch, that this metric does not actually measure the health of the economy when this whole channel is over-reliant on looking at the stock market. And the wealthiest 10% own over 90% of the stocks in this country. So those metrics are the ones that have been failures in terms of like actually looking at people's pain. It's part of why the Biden administration wasn't able to connect on this, is because they were over-reliant on those same metrics.
There's also another category of bankruptcies called the mega bankruptcy, which is for companies with over $1 billion in assets. And that has reached 32 filings in the 12 months leading up to mid-2025, which is above the annual average of 23 from 2005 to 2024.
So only 20 years of data. So what's your point?
Yeah.
Well,
can't really judge. Don't make a conclusion off of that.
Let's just hear how she's going to say this is completely overblown.
In existence for 4 years. This is not evidence of anything.
All right, let me try to strengthen the case of this segment a little bit. I'll just add this in, all right? Chapter 13 bankruptcies, consumer bankruptcy cases, are up compared to recent years. So far, more than 180,000 cases have been filed this year, nearly 5% more than the first 11 months of last year, Marcus. So maybe the whole thing Dagan was talking about is meaningless, but you got some consumer.
Well, nothing she says is meaningless. I'll start with that.
Well, she proved me meaningless, but you now have to deal with this new data.
We need to acknowledge that high interest rates and tariffs have affected small businesses. Hard stop. We need to acknowledge that. We also need to acknowledge that this subchapter 5 is an easy, quick, less expensive, keep ownership of your entire business, flush the toilet, and move on process. And typically,
the idea, though, that people want to go into bankruptcy, even though their business is booming.
It's great, actually. That's why I'm doing it. Because my business is doing so good.
People don't go into personal bankruptcy because it's fun. That's not why. There's no personal bankruptcy benefit either.
Those are the same people that are living in their mom's basement just so that they can collect a Medicaid card.
Exactly.
I call it a courtesy flush.
They're also business owners.
Yes, they're also small business owners that are filing both business and personal bankruptcy, just to live off the government's teat.
Virulent denial going on at Fox Business News right now. We'll see how long that lasts. We've had these interest rates been up for quite some time. the idea that they're just hitting now is ridiculous. All right, couple of words from our sponsors, and then we'll be talking to Ben Freeman, co-author of The Trillion-Dollar War Machine, How Runaway Military Spending Drives America into Foreign Wars and Bankrupts Us at Home. It is December. There's a lot of hustle bustle. It's freezing cold these days mm-hmm. in New York. I mean, it's not freezing cold, but it's cold for this time of year. And yeah, the wind.
The pond is literally frozen in Prospect Park.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It's gift-giving time, however. And who deserves a gift that helps them relax in your life? Well, probably everybody. I don't know why anybody wouldn't deserve to relax. Here is the gift idea for you, and it is Cozy Earth. Their clothes, their sheets. I've got their sheets now. I've got their hoodie is my favorite hoodie. I wore the joggers this weekend. Ostensibly, I was going to go to the gym with Saul, but I had a toe problem. It's not, I don't need to get into that. Cozy Earth, they've got great socks. I mean, anything that you want to give as a gift and you want people to feel cozy, their towels are super plush. They've got a new ribbed plush towel that is fantastic. Their sheets, like I say, are my favorite sheets that I've ever had because they are temperature regulating. They are made from viscose, which is from bamboo. It's super soft, but it's super breathable too. I don't know how it works, but that's it. That's the way it works. And they have a great holiday gift for cozy moments: the Bubble Cuddle Blanket. The Bubble Cuddle Blanket combines comfort and style with distinctly textured bubble design and ultra soft faux fur feel. Featuring an extended plush pile and mid-weight construction, perfect for snuggling by the fire, movie nights with family, or adding a touch of luxury to any room. It's a gift that makes every day feel like a special occasion. And the beauty is Cozy Earth purchases are risk-free. They have a 100-night sleep trial. You try them out. If you don't love them, return them hassle-free. 10-year warranty. Because once you feel this level of comfort, you want it to last a decade. Thanks to Cozy Earth for sponsoring this episode. Give the gift of everyday luxury this holiday season. Head to CozyEarth.com. Use code MajorityReport for up to 40% off. Just be sure to place your order by December 12th. You got a couple more days for guaranteed Christmas delivery. Listening after the 12th, don't worry. Code MajorityReport still works year-round for 20% off. And if you get a post-purchase survey, be sure you mention that you heard about Cozy Earth from this program. Give the gift of comfort that lasts beyond the holidays and carries into a cozy new year. Sponsoring the program today, ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a great service that makes it super easy for you to connect with a great doctor across various different fields and schedule at your convenience in a way that makes it easy for you. They have a, you know, look on the calendar, see what's available, click on it, no going back and forth. And also have it tell you whether they accept your insurance or not. Mm. And ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. It is awesome. ZocDoc lets you book in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty. You can filter for doctors who are near you. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance. You can filter for doctors who are rated as having a good bedside manner, or doctors who have good listening skills, or short wait times, whatever it is. And you can see their actual appointment openings, choose a time slot that works for you, click and instantly book a visit. Appointments made through ZocDoc also happen fast, typically within 24 to 72 hours of booking. You can even get same-day appointments. I've had the same doctor for years and years, but I was out of town and needed a dentist, and ZocDoc to the rescue. Got one that was great quality dentist. I had an emergency crown issue. and took my insurance. Bingo, bango. I know you guys have both used ZocDoc.
Oh, yeah. I found my dentist through ZocDoc.
I want to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode. Stop putting off those doctor's appointments. Go to ZocDoc.com/majority. Find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/majority. ZocDoc.com/majority. Emma, OneSkin.
Yes, I would like to thank OneSkin for sponsoring today's episode. If you are like me, your skin needs some extra care this time of year. I mean, gosh, it's dry. It's cold. You got some, maybe some sun damage from the summer and things like that. It can feel like nonstop stress to your system, and that's why I continue to rely on OneSkin. I've talked about this before. I love that OS1 face, and especially that OS1 eye, which is just so light and creamy and good on that very sensitive skin around your eyes. It's invaluable to
OS. It's OneSkin. I didn't. Now it
is. Now you figured it out? Okay. OS1. Yeah. Okay. OneSkin. And they've got the OS1 face. They've got the OS1 eye. It's excellent. And you have longevity benefits. It's powerful. The skincare benefits are great. And you just need a few simple steps. I mentioned this. I love that OneSkin OS1 face thing. It comes in this reusable shell, which is really great. And the eye stuff. I've had difficulty finding an eye cream that does not cause like irritation or sensitivity for me. But the OS1 eye is really helpful. It's great for preventative things like with wrinkles and all that stuff, elasticity. At the core is their patented OS1 peptide, the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells, the root cause of wrinkles, crepiness, and loss of elasticity, which are all key signs of skin aging. And these results have now been validated in 5 different clinical studies. I've noticed a little bit more brightness, the skin around my eyes in particular, a little bit less elastic in that way. It's easy to use. You just cleanse, you pat your skin dry, and you apply twice daily. It's easy to add it to your daily routine. And for a limited time only, OneSkin just launched their limited edition holiday sets, including the Nightly Rewind gift set, which is just one of those rare gifts that's both impressive and genuinely useful, providing an upgrade to anyone's nightly routine. It features their best-selling face moisturizer, their new peptide lip mask, a cool gua sha tool, and each component of their set is designed to work together as your body enters its natural nightly repair mode, helping renew skin at the cellular level for a stronger, smoother, and more resilient skin. That is a great gift, by the way, these limited edition holiday sets from OneSkin. This season, don't just moisturize, support your skin at the cellular level with OneSkin. For a limited time, try OneSkin for 15% off using code MAJORITY at oneskin.co/majority. That's 15% off at oneskin.co/majority with code MAJORITY. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please help us out and tell them the Majority Report sent you. Try OneSkin today. Link down below in the episode and YouTube descriptions and at majority.fm.
We'll put all those links there. And don't forget, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can get the show ad-free by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Okay, quick break. When we come back, Ben Freeman, co-author of The Trillion-Dollar War Machine, How Runaway Military Spending Drives America into Foreign Wars and Bankrupts Us at Home. We are back, Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Ben Freeman. He is the director of Democratizing Foreign Policy Program at the Quincy Institute and co-author with William Hartung of the recently released $1 trillion War Machine, How Runaway Military Spending Drives America into Foreign Wars and Bankrupts Us at Home. Ben, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start where I think the most obvious place to start, and your book starts there as well, when we're talking about the war machine in this country, is with Eisenhower. In 1961, as he's headed for the door, he warns people of the military-industrial complex, which originally, my understanding is, the phrase was the military-congressional industrial complex. Let's start there and just maybe talk about what it was that he was worried about and what it has become, which is, I think, even for him, would be sort of shocking.
Yeah, Sam, you're exactly right. In Eisenhower's explanation of it, there was this sort of iron triangle, this collaboration between Congress, between the Pentagon, and between corporations who were profiting off the Pentagon's budget. And he saw this system as being circuitous and sort of self-reinforcing, that if you played by the rules as a member of Congress, then you would go on to work for one of these firms, either as a lobbyist or directly for them. They would pay you a lucrative salary to drive more and more contracts back to those firms. What's happened since then is really the reason why we wrote this book. And in those over 60 years since, we've seen that system expand well beyond those few players and really encompass everything you can possibly think of, from sporting events to Hollywood, the gaming industry, the tech sector, you name it, wherever you go these days, the military-industrial complex is there.
Talk about sort of like what was the impetus. I mean, we gear up to fight World War II, and essentially that impetus becomes like a self-licking ice cream cone.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. I mean, when you look at the build up to World War II, we needed a lot of equipment and we needed it really quick. So we turned to the industries that we had here in the U.S. You know, we turned to the automotive industry and we said, well, you know, instead of making just cars, can you make some military equipment for us? Can you make things that can get our troops over to Europe? And, you know, we turned the industry on its head then. What we didn't realize is that when the war ended, that the industry wasn't going to turn away. You couldn't just flip a switch and turn this, you know, gigantic war machine off. And so, especially because that war machine was very lucrative during World War II and in the wars after. So what we saw was this system then that ultimately gets created, where you have all of these jobs, all of these economies that are surrounding these wars, and it becomes self-perpetuating. That, you know, when you have all of that infrastructure in place, you need wars to justify it. You need a conflict, or you need a monster overseas to destroy to justify all that spending. And what we talk about in the book is that, again, in these last 60 years since Eisenhower gave that message, we've just been doing that over and over and over again, creating more and more monsters to justify all this.
Let's start with like the I guess incentive structure. There's parallel incentive structures for all of this, which is why it exists in the way that it does and it is expanded. How we have military contractors in every state in some fashion, or a base or something to that effect. Talk about that, because I think at one point, like Bernie Sanders, you know, was talking about like a base in Vermont. I mean, he is traditionally a very anti-war a politician, one of the sort of the rare ones. But if you've got an employer who is the foundation of like one of your cities or towns, it's very difficult to say we should close that one.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, over 100 years ago, another guy, even before Eisenhower, there was a guy named Smedley Butler famously said, war is a racket. And he's right. He was right then. Over 100 years later, he's still right. War is a racket today. And unfortunately, everybody's in on it. You know, as you mentioned, every state, every congressional district, they've got some jobs to one extent or another tied to the U.S. military. Tied to Pentagon contractors. And this is really a key when it comes to the lobbying in the military-industrial complex. Pentagon contractors can tell you exactly how many jobs are in your congressional district tied to any one of their specific weapons. You know, one of the greatest examples of this is with the F-35 program. The F-35, this is just one aircraft program. The F-35 claims jobs in 48 states in the U.S. and almost every single congressional district as well. And they can come into any congressional office and tell you exactly how many jobs in that congressional district are from this program. And what they're doing when they do that, they're sending a clear message to you. You vote against this program, you're voting against jobs at home, you're voting against your constituents, your voters. And if you do vote against that program, Lockheed Martin is sure to let those folks know. So it becomes this, you know, as you previously said, a self-licking ice cream cone. You know, you're not going to bite the hand that feeds you. You know, you're not going to go after those jobs in your own district. So what we see year after year then is all of these members of Congress supporting this F-35 program, not because it's a well-performing fighter jet. You know, this
is like 50% fail rate, isn't it? Right. Something like that. I mean, yeah. Like it literally has a 50% fail rate.
Right, right. My friend at the Simpson Center, Dan Grazier, he put out a report. He called it the part-time fighter jet. You know, it can only really work to its full capacity about a third of the time. And yet every year we spend billions and billions of dollars buying more and more of these planes. So it's another reason why we wrote this book, Sam, is that the system isn't making us safer. We're spending more and more and more on the military every year, and we're getting less and less security from it.
Where do you see that beginning to turn? I know that, like, you know, in the aftermath of World War II, you have the explosion of, like, even the aerospace industry, and that expands really quickly, right? And it's almost like the industry begins to grow in these areas of the country until it gets so big. And you talk about this in the 1990s, where there were these mergers, where then they're able to leverage that and maintain their size to a point where now it's just basically like they're kind of running the show. Would you say the 90s is the tipping point when there was all of this consolidation?
The 90s was a huge point. Yeah. That's a great question and a great point. The 90s is a key pivotal moment in all this. The 90s, you know, it was the so-called peace dividend eras, right? Like, you know, or the end of history, you know, whatever we want to call it. We'd won the Cold War, you know, peace was breaking out everywhere. And so, you know, Clinton's reducing the Pentagon budget. And, you know, there was a clear message. He was saying, you know, some of you contractors might go out of business. And what ended up happening was a period of extreme consolidation. And the ultimate result of it is you get the primes that we talk about today, you know, the Lockheed Martins, Boeings, the Raytheon, General Dynamics. And these are the prime contractors that really control a lion's share of all the contracting money coming out of the Pentagon. And then what happens, I think another key point in this march towards the privatization of the military is the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, really, if you look at those conflicts, those were the first two conflicts where we really saw the privatization of war. We saw, you know, wartime contracting just going wild. We saw the rampant corruption, literally bags of cash, you know, piles of money just disappearing in these conflicts. And a big reason for that is because we had slashed the active duty military, and we had this idea that we were going to rely more and more on contractors. We learned over the years of those conflicts that was a flawed system, and yet we kept going anyways. And that helped us to get to the point where we're at today. We're now 54% of the military's budget goes not to the troops, it goes to contractors.
So, all right, there's a lot to unpack. That one, did that consolidation, ostensibly it's about paring things down, but all it ended up doing was creating five behemoths that are, in some respects, because they're so concentrated, they control so much of the billions and billions and billions in dollars. We're up to almost basically our annual budget is about $1 trillion now. Hence the name of your book. That they become too powerful on some level to rein in, like that concentration. It seems like they're just wielding too much power because, you know, I got to imagine the amount of money they could spend on lobbying. There, I think you in the book say there's about 1,000 of these war lobbyists, and there's about 4 lobby like anti-war lobbyists, I guess. I mean, like maybe less. I'm sorry, maybe just slightly more. But so is that also like an element as to what keeps this machine going? That level of concentration there on these things.
I think that's absolutely right. And the way we describe it is that these firms effectively operate like an autoimmune response to any sort of change at the Department of Defense. And that, you know, if any new technology comes in, any new players, they have a built-in system to suppress change, to fight anybody that wants to cut these programs. They have, you know, as you mentioned, they have nearly 2 lobbyists for every member of Congress. So, you know, they can double team your member of Congress just about any time they want. They're spending over $100 million every single year there just on lobbying. But that's just the beginning of it. You know, they're spending tens of millions of dollars a year on think tanks. You know, my colleague Nick Cleveland Stout and I at the Quincy Institute, we've chronicled this a lot. You can't sleep on think tanks' influence in this space either. And it goes beyond that. You know, again, it goes into sporting events. The Pentagon's working directly with Hollywood. You know, if you've seen Top Gun 2, you might have noticed that Lockheed Martin's logo flashes on the screen in the middle of Tom Cruise, you know, crashing a plane to the ground. You know, wherever you go, they have this influence machine that's just baked in now to make sure that the money keeps flowing to them and it keeps out the change. What's interesting now, and I think to Emma's question about the 90s consolidation, we're in another change period where we have the defense tech bros who are coming in and really challenging these prime contractors right now. And the prime contractors are resisting them tooth and nail. But whether they like it or not, you know, the Elon Musk, the Peter Thiels, the Palmer Luckies of the world, they're here. And now they're getting a bigger and bigger slice of the Pentagon pie every year.
Well, I do just yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to stay before we get to the tech stuff on this, and we should say the book is in 3 sections, or one being the cost of the war machine, the second being the selling. I want to touch a little bit more on the selling of the war machine, because everybody is so invested in it. It's like too big to fail on some level. Right. You mentioned like the relationships that they're developed in Hollywood and this ongoing. And this is something Greg Mitchell we've had on a couple of times about some of his documentaries, where he talked about the war efforts and the use of propaganda in the context of the bomb, of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Our entire media, it seems, is beholden to a lot of these companies in particular because of just from advertising revenue. Like, there's nobody who's not getting paid by them. And in some fashion or another, you have the Congress people who their districts depend on it, on this financing, media. Do we even have like a pillar of society that is not sort of like infected by this?
I think you and I, the American public, frankly, you know, it's really to your point, it's really everywhere you go. And, you know, I didn't even talk about the media yet, but, you know, we have a chapter in the $1 trillion war machine that's explicitly about media. And when you look at mainstream media coverage of questions of war and peace, my God, man, like, it's so biased towards these defense contractors. And whenever they happen to interview one of these folks, the CEO of a defense contractor, they just bend over backwards to be nice to them and not be critical. But at the end of the day, these are war profiteers. But the reason they're nice is because very often they're making multi-million dollar ad buys for these networks. You know, there's the new stealth bomber, you know, got its own Super Bowl commercial. You know, that's a couple million dollars just right there. You know, major mainstream media newspaper outlets are running full page ad from these folks. And so, you know, the media is on the take. Mainstream media is on the take from this, too. So you're not getting it there.
And the military, the former military that they interview in any type of war or, you know, any type of like sort of military situation, the vast majority of them sit on the boards of these companies.
Exactly. And in cushy board seats where they're making six-figure salaries to do very little else than talk to the media. And it's not just them, too. I mentioned the think tank funding issue before. A lot of the think tank experts that appear regularly on mainstream media outlets, they work at organizations who get a majority of their funding from the Pentagon or from Pentagon contractors. So do you really think they're going to give, you know, this purely objective vision of what should happen in this conflict? No, they're going to tell you that, you know, we need more arms going to these countries, more arms sales, more U.S. military involvement.
And when, just to talk about the tech piece of this, it's not necessarily anything new, right? I mean, I believe that this was written about in the book Palo Alto by Malcolm, I'm forgetting his last name, Harris, thank you, when they spoke a little bit about how Cold War spending really built up Silicon Valley and those tech companies. I think Steve Wozniak, wasn't his dad at Lockheed Martin or something like that? I might be incorrect about that. But there's a lot of ties with the growth of the tech industry out west and these defense contracts. So, like, how does that play into your analysis? Because a lot of this is very fluid, and it seems almost like now with the technology Palantir piece, it's just it's almost the same dynamic that we spoke about where they consolidated in the 90s. They're big enough now that they run the show.
Right, right. It is such a good point. And if you look at this over time, there's real ebbs and flows to it. It's exactly what you're saying. You know, a lot of the seed money for some of these firms, you know, originally came from the Pentagon. You know, you look at DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. You know, a lot of that technology finds its way into Silicon Valley and you know, vice versa. So they had a very good relationship there for a while. But that really changed. You know, prior to the last few years, I would say in the last, you know, 2 to 3 years especially, there were kind of frigid relations between the Department of Defense in Silicon Valley in the tech sector. You know, there's some famous incidents where tech companies were just flat out saying they didn't want to work for the Department of Defense. It just wasn't worth it. DOD wasn't operating on the timeline of tech companies. You know, I hate to keep beating up at the on the F-35. I love beating up on the F-35, but I'll keep doing it again. The F-35 has been in development for almost 25 years. And that's just insane. You know, if you think about that in the tech space, like, we didn't have iPhones when the F-35 first started. You know, that goes so far back. So for the longest time, the tech sector said, we're not going to work with you, DOD. It's just not worth it. But that's all changing with this administration, especially. When you look at the Trump administration, you know, Trump's biggest backer, Elon Musk, huge force there. J.D. Vance, one of his mentors, is a guy named Peter Thiel, founder of Palantir, other firms. The Secretary of the Army is another VC guy, too. So you have all these just high-ranking officials in this administration that are coming straight out of the tech sector. So that's why I think we're at this really pivotal moment for tech, where if it's not an outright tech takeover, there's at least going to be a huge chunk of the pie, that Pentagon budget in the coming years, that's going to the tech folks.
Do you think that's going to eat into the so-called prime ones, that the big five, or are they just going to expand the pie, essentially, and sort of complement each other? I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Google's saying was "Do no evil" or something, and it feels like, particularly when you're talking about Palantir and Musk, like, doing evil is sort of almost like the business plan.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because I'll bring up another tech guy, Palmer Luckey, who has had some really if you use the Oculus, the origins of the Oculus lie in Palmer's Luckey garage. And, you know, so he's a brilliant tech guy, but he founded a company called Anduril. And, you know, he's really gotten into the cutting edge of this defense tech space. And he has a lot of choice quotes about exactly what you were saying there, Sam. And, you know, one of them is, like, you need guys that are sick in the head like him. This is him talking about himself, who are willing to create these devices that he knows will, tech that he knows will be used to kill people. And the sort of morality of Silicon Valley has kind of followed along that path. You know, 10 years ago, if somebody said that in Silicon Valley, you know, they'd have been booed out of the room. You know, that would not have been okay. But nowadays in the defense tech space, that's perfectly commonplace. So to your point about what, you know, my prediction going forward, what we're seeing right now is that a rising Pentagon budget is lifting all boats. Right. The old guard primes, they're getting more and more money, and the new defense tech startups like companies like Anduril's and the Palantirs, they're getting more and more money too. But I don't think that can go on forever. I think you're quickly going to see, as these tech folks get in, they are producing better equipment. They're producing unmanned systems. They're producing more of them quicker than the old guard primes are. So at some point, I do think they're going to start displacing them.
Interesting. I mean, we have had such an extraordinarily large increase in the military budget, it feels like, over the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, maybe, you know, less than 10 years, I feel like it's increased by 30%.
Yeah, it's been extraordinary. And then this is why we had the title for our book, Trillion Dollar War Machine. Believe it or not, we had this title 2 years ago, and we thought we were being very clever, and that this was going to be a prophecy. You know, we're going to write this book, and then eventually it hit $1 trillion. We didn't realize that when Trump passed the big, beautiful bill this past summer, there was over $100 billion in excess Pentagon funding in that bill. So for the first time, that put the Pentagon budget over $1 trillion. So our book went from being prophecy to just being descriptive about the world we live in now. So we really have, you're spot on. We've seen an extraordinary growth in the Pentagon budget. And again, unfortunately, because of all these forces that we're talking about here, I don't really see that changing anytime soon.
Well, let's talk about, like, you know, you do have a section, a final chapter of the book that we're at a crossroads in some respect when you talk about the future of the war machine. And at one point you do write about, you know, how we would get from war machine to peace machine. What would be where is the weak point in this sort of non-benevolent cycle, I guess, that we have? In terms of players, and then secondarily, where is the first cuts located? In other words, we have 750 some odd bases around the world.
That's a good start.
Because that seems to be where's the easiest place to cut in terms of the various stakeholders that are making money off of this.
I love the overseas bases as a good first place to start, because look, at the end of the day, overseas bases are more expensive than U.S. military bases here in the U.S. It costs a lot of money to get people over there. It costs a lot of money to get things over there. You know, all that's more expensive. And there's no constituency over there that's voting for Congress that benefits from those bases. Like we were talking about earlier, you try to cut a base in anywhere in the U.S., and the two senators from that state and the local representatives, they're going to raise hell about it, because they don't want to lose the jobs and all the economy that surrounds those base. You can't make the same argument for an overseas military base. You know, those voters in Guam, you know, they're not, those folks don't get a vote here in the U.S. And so what I think the easiest politically palatable place to start cuts are in those overseas military bases. You know, at the end of the day, we have tens of thousands of military personnel overseas. Some countries have over 10,000, you know, Germany and South Korea and Japan specifically have right around 10,000 folks in just in a single country. And, you know, those are good candidates to start for cuts. Beyond them, you know, I'd say some of these big legacy programs that are just chewing up a lot of the budget. The F-35 is a prime example. You know, we've already talked about how this is a plane operating on, you know, 2000s level technology. So that's a great place for cuts. I think aircraft carriers are another place. You know, one aircraft carrier is costing around $13 billion now, and China is creating hypersonic missiles and drone swarms, things like that, to counter them. And so, you know, for China, our carriers are, you know, largely very expensive targets for them to take out. So I think that's another candidate, too. It's programs like that, I think, where it's clearly a Cold War era technology that there's plenty of savings to be found in the Pentagon budget.
Well, go ahead.
Who are the stakeholders in those foreign bases, though? Like who's going to give the most pushback if you were to close those bases, and what would they say?
Those foreign governments, it's a great question. And this is when I'm not analyzing the Pentagon budget, my first book, which is also over my shoulder, was on the foreign lobbying industry in the U.S. And what I've seen now for decades is that whenever you go to the U.S. goes to close a foreign military base, that foreign government starts lobbying like crazy to make sure it doesn't happen. And a very similar system to what we have with the military industrial complex takes place. That foreign government hires big time DC lobbying and public relations firms. Those firms have former members of Congress on their payroll who then go, they get paid big bucks to go in and lobby their former colleagues to keep those military bases open. So what we need, we got to push back against that, because, again, there's no constituents there. So members of Congress can say no to some of those lobbying and PR firms.
Well, it's also very similar to how the United States has made its empire in the past, 100 years or so, where you make these countries that maybe are developing dependent on our sort of investment. And then when that goes away, then that creates some sort of chaos and things like that. But it is, I think, notable that the United States is overextending itself kind of in two separate areas, one with the continuation of that kind of foreign policy needing to have a footprint everywhere. And then two, it's also the idea that like there's this massive middleman taking out so much value versus what China's doing, which is much more direct state control of these kinds of things and not having this major like profit incentive that's taking all of the value out. It's wildly inefficient, too, as evidenced by the Pentagon failing an audit literally every single year, but we keep giving them more money. So it's just really it's like a criminal racket. It's the most expensive one that I can think of.
Yeah, no, completely agree. And the Pentagon, to be clear, the Pentagon has never passed an audit, not once. It's not like, oh, you know, it just failed the most recent one, you know. No, it has literally never passed one. So we know it's not auditable. And we know, to your point about the middlemen, I think that's such a good way to describe this system. Because these contractors, they're getting hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money every year, and they're reporting record profits, and they're using some of their profits more and more for stock buybacks to keep driving up their stock prices. Lockheed Martin, for example, just a few years ago, spent billions of dollars, billions with a B, just on stock buybacks and just to drive up that price. Nothing about that helps you and I be safer. Nothing about that, you know, defends us from, you know, China, Iran, or any other boogeyman that's out there. And yet that's the system that we're sitting in when it comes to military spending, where you have billions of dollars that stem from it just going to stock buybacks.
How much of our understanding of those boogeymen is a function of this industry wanting to sell weapons?
It's so much of it. And I think, you know, one of the points that we make in the book is that you can't justify a $1 trillion military budget without having monsters in the world, whether they're real or imaginary. You have to convince the American people that there is a threat out there, a very, very serious threat to their life and livelihood, to their children, to their family, an existential threat to them. Otherwise, if you don't convince them of that, then suddenly people start to ask, you know, really hard questions like, well, instead of spending on defense, should we maybe spend more on healthcare, education, childcare? I have a 1- and a 3-year-old, and the cost of childcare is just absurd these days. And you're getting families out there just getting so little help with that. And so if you don't have those monsters, then people start asking those questions. And so what the military-industrial complex does an extraordinary job of is creating those monsters abroad for us to destroy. And, you know, whether it's China, whether it's Iran, you know, whether it's Russia or whoever the enemy of the day might be, they have to have that to justify the system. Once the veil is pulled back and you realize, oh, you know, Wizard of Oz moment, those monsters aren't so evil after all, then the whole system can crumble.
Well, that is where we're talking about. We can bring in Israel here. I think that's important just to modernize this. Like, I think it's very important as us on the left to not speak about Israel as controlling our foreign policy, but as it being more of a function of the $1 trillion war machine and an outpost for us in the Middle East, operating in that manner. There's another great book, The Palestine Laboratory, I cited all the time, by Anthony Lowenstein, that talks about how the weapons are tested in Gaza and had been prior to the start of the genocide. And like, when you see how younger people, and it really is even younger Republicans, they talk about it differently than we do, but in the voting population, they've lost, like, the military industrial complex has lost that messaging battle as it relates to the Middle East for everybody over under 40. And so I guess I'm just wondering if you could reflect on how, you know, there's no historical parallel between it with to the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. It's very, very specific, and it feels very specific to your thesis as well.
Right, right. I mean, at the end of the day, Israel is the number one recipient of U.S. arms abroad, and has been for decades, has the special relationship, you know, has U.S. military backing. And to your point, that's such a good point that I think folks don't recognize, that Gaza has been a testing lab for arms makers for years, you know, not just since, you know, October 7th. And so you kind of have, you know, something of an experimental lab that's part of, you know, an offshoot of the military industrial complex there. But I'm hopeful to your point too, Emma, there about the next generation. You know, when it comes to the military industrial complex, I think, you know, it's trite to say, but the children are the future. Because they don't trust the system anywhere near to the level that folks did who grew up during the Cold War and kind of had this blind, you know, Top Gun level, you know, support the military no matter what. I think they're seeing more and more how money is being wasted here, where the corruption is, you know, how we're just wasting so many taxpayer dollars on this. So, you know, to Sam's earlier point about, you know, what can happen next, you know, how do we tried to spin this in the last chapter of the book to provide a glimmer of hope that the next generation is much more opposed to this than previous generations were.
How do you, what's your perspective on the sort of a trans ideological or partisan alliance on these things? I mean, how, you know, because there's a lot of folks on the right who appear on some level to be anti-war, though it seems also rather selective in certain instances. But what is your sense of, like, how of the viability of that and how it would work? I mean, it's one thing for Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul to bring up legislation to stop something. That to me seems, you know, like there's a real material benefit to Sanders pairing with Rand Paul, but I'm not so sure that necessarily, like, there's value in us joining forces with libertarian YouTubers,
right?
Because they can't necessarily do anything that, you know, they can operate on their own and we can operate on our own. I'm curious as your perspective on that across the sort of the spectrum of different possible alliances.
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot is made kind of about the anti-interventionist right, the rise of the anti-interventionist right, and, you know, folks like Tucker Carlson, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And you know, I do think some of that, it's we're making more of it than it's actually there. Because if you still look at the way, to your point, Sam, look at the votes. Don't look at what people say. look at how they vote, look at the legislation they're introducing. You know, when it comes to put pen to paper on this stuff, are they still supporting the system or not? And I actually had a really good conversation with, I'm going to name drop another member, Thomas Massey, who I think has actually been just excellent on these issues. And we presented, the Quincy Institute presented an award to him along with Rokana as being just two wonderful voices for peace in Congress. And, you know, he's supporting AUMF's authorization for use of military force. And, you know, he has been a voice that's really questioned why the U.S. is involved in wars. He's coming at it from a different angle than a lot of progressives are, right? He's coming at it from more of an America first angle. Like, what are America's interests when we get involved in these foreign conflicts? And so it might be a different justification for it. But I think folks like him have proven that they're willing to vote in a more restrained direction. And so, I say, like, they're still a minority. They're still a minority in the Republican Party. So there's still not this real upsurge of, you know, Republican non-interventionists. But maybe that'll change. And now Marjorie Taylor Greene's leaving. So now there's one fewer.
Right.
Yeah.
Ben Freeman, the book is The $1 trillion War Machine, How Runaway Military Spending Drives America into Foreign Wars and Bankrupts Us at Home, co-written with William Hartung. We'll put a link to that at majority.fm and in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, folks. That's it for the pre-show. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. When you become a member of The Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com, not only do you get the free show, but you get it free of ads, and you get to I Am the Show.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, like, you know, here's Occam's Blazer says, I found my therapist through ZocDoc before they were sponsoring Majority Report. She has helped me so much work through my issues and become a noticeably better husband and feel better and connected.
That's great.
Nice. Nevertheless, you could avoid those ads and the audio portion of the program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop right now, it's their 30% sale. You can use the code coupon code majority, but you don't need to. But drop it in there anyways to know that, to let them know that you came from us. But also buy the Majority Report blend. Try different blends. Try different single origin coffees. Now's the time to do it at 30% off. I know Matthew Film Guy, he goes and buys a 5-pound bag right now.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
All right. That's a good investment. Before you go, Matt, I remembered this. I'm supposed to plug when I'm doing shows. If you want to check me out on Abby Phillips' show tonight from 10 to 11 p.m. Eastern, I will be on CNN tonight. So there's that. First time.
Nice.
So check it out, folks.
Open conversation is the way of humans connecting.
That's what we believe over here.
Yeah.
David Griscom and I had some open conversation about the people that call betting prediction markets in order to make a lot of money off of it. And also,
we got to have somebody on to talk about this relationship with CNN because it is freaking nuts.
Should I call that out tonight right off the rip?
Yeah.
So what are the odds on here?
Yeah,
What's the spread?
Yeah, you should use the word, like, I'm going to bet you that, you just preface everything with that.
Yes.
What are the odds? I'll bet you.
Yeah.
We need to parlay this into something greater.
Mm-hmm.
We also got into the Somalis trolling Stephen Miller and Donald Trump. I don't think that, like, all the people who are saying, like, I saw Neo Berg, a Zionist, saying, like, what are the Somalis getting at with these jokes? Like, not understanding what they're meaning when they say Minnesota was promised us 3,000 years ago.
Oh, my God.
And the amount of humor in the Somali Minnesota population is greater than both the Christian fascist and Zionists put together.
Oh, my God.
Astounding.
By far. Also, I should say, in full disclosure, Kalshi, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
They reached out to us. Did you know this?
No.
They reached out to us to partner
buy
with
us off
to yeah. partner with us. This is before, like, I think we've ever, like, I had never even heard of them.
Like, did you think it was cereal, like healthy cereal?
No, Kashi.
Kolein. Wait, I like Kashi.
I'm not going to do any healthy cereal around it.
I vetoed it.
No, but they, because I had to click through to find out what it was. And I realized it's like a polymarket. And, you know, I don't know if I ever wrote back to them and said, not interested. I think I just ignored the email from them. But they were making a big push. This was probably, I think I saw this like a month before the CNN thing. So probably last month.
Oh, wow.
They must have
not seen any of our coverage of this kind of thing.
No. The that happens a lot. Like, we think we may be great partners for you guys. Oh, it's because you were making so much fun of Polymarket.
Right. Probably right.
You're looking for a competing
yes.
way to gamify everything.
Those people just look at attention metrics. They no content.
No, not at all. I mean,
they just run it through an AI, probably.
Exactly. What are the views?
What yeah, exactly? And look, you know, if you like to gamble, that is all well and good. But
not
the idea
on this kind of stuff. Not but, on this kind
well,
of stuff.
Well, but the like, idea that just
the length
sort
of
like.
Genocide?
I mean, it is. The idea that a news organization.
Yeah.
Would.
Partner with them
is psycho.
Deeply disturbing. Yeah. They're going to incorporate odds into their coverage. Insane.
Like, I mean, even like. Like, obviously, like, a progressive news organization, I think it's more problematic because I think our values are such that this is not a good thing for society.
Yes.
CNN promotes a lot of things that are not good things for society. But the idea that they would integrate it with their news is psycho.
They're going to bring Jimmy the Greek on to be like, what's the over-under on ACA deaths?
Exactly.
Well, I think that's when we'll fall out of love with Harry Emden is when he starts doing Kalshi odds in the middle of his polling segments.
Oh, my God.
This is the first year I don't have NBA League Pass. And I'll say, like, it's because of watching these games live and the amount of even on the screen real estate they give to the betting line. I don't want to hear about it. I don't like get this off of my screen. Don't talk about it.
Is it on the screen?
Yes. They put the betting lines on the effing screen now.
Yep.
And the
announcers talk about
that
it.
And the Celtics games that
all
do that?
Well, it's on the crawl on the bottom, and then they do in-game ads that like
yeah,
overtake
it's
it.
So
I mute
gross.
Them. I mean, but you have to be on your remote, so you mute these ads, and it's just like exhausting.
It's crazy. It's the end times, literally.
Yeah.
With that said, let's head into the fun half.
It's the end times.
We'll see you in the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What?
What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second.
The Majority Report.
Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
What is up, everyone?
Nomi Keen.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
All right, me? Is it?
Yes.
Is it me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is it me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. what's on your mind.
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start
up. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-35-501. One half. 3-8.
9-11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop. Call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all, my favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. It's the fun half, ladies and gentlemen. It is 1:15, time for us to hit the bottle. And because everything we've learned, we have learned from the chief of staff of the Department of Defense, or Department of War, as they call it. Here is OAN's Matt Gaetz going in. And
by the way, it's not the subject of ridicule in this clip.
He was not the subject of ridicule. Good questioning of this guy. What is
Predator
fascinating
Matt.
About this? I want to make this clear. He's not interviewing this guy like as he's walking out of dinner at 10:30 at night or something. Or he's not at like a club. It's you can see the presidential seal, the White House,
the Pentagon.
Sorry, a seal behind him. So he's literally seems to have like either walked off of like the podium or is just there. And I guess
he's trafficking in some journalism here on the ground.
Yes. But I'm saying you'll see from this chief of staff, there seems to be some requirements in Hegseth's Pentagon now that you got to follow. Look,
exactly. The fog of war is spread.
Exactly. Here we go.
I do want to talk about some of the legacy platforms that I've long been a critic of. I'll start with the F-35. They cost about $100 million a copy. What percentage of the F-35 are fully mission capable today?
So that's a great question, Matt, and I appreciate you getting after it because not enough. Not enough. It is the most capable fighter that we have right now. When it flies, you're right. It is the most capable fighter. What we have right now, and you saw last month in the acquisition speech, is a department and leadership that's
Hold
willing
a second.
To get after
Can
it.
Can we just check in during the acquisition speech? Can we just check in with our measure as to whether someone's been drinking? That is the we'll give them the Foster Brooks test. This is Foster Brooks, of course, on the Dean Martin show back in the day. Foster Brooks, well, probably America's most famous drunk guy. For those of you who are too young, it was a while back. Nobody's tried to replace him, but this guy. So let's just check acquisition.
Yeah, I know who you are. You're Dean.
Dean Martin.
You know who I am? No, I don't. Would you mind asking around?
go back. I don't know. Just let's go back to this guy with the acquisition and just see.
I mean, come on, though. Like, it's like going to a comedy show. It's a 2-drink minimum to enter the Department of War.
Pentagon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the unfinished sentences meter at here?
What we have right now, and you saw last month in the acquisition speech, is a department and leadership that's willing to get after it to challenge industry to produce better.
Yeah, but what percentage of them can fly?
So not enough. Not enough.
So but you just called it our most capable platform, and less than 40% of them, by my last review of the Air Force's statements, are fully mission capable. Why is it not failure for a platform to perform at less than 40% when it costs $100 million.
So, Matt, looking at it holistically, sure, you can throw out the number 40%. But when you look at Operation Midnight Hammer, Operation Rough Rider,
those weren't F-35 was not delivering the payload on Midnight Hammer.
But they were supporting, right? And so those B-2s wouldn't have gotten there without that. The airplane.
What would have stopped them?
There are plenty of surface-to-air missile systems that the Iranians have. We know that. We know
did they shoot any of them?
No, they didn't, because we were so successful. And that platform, the F-35, is an amazing platform that can go after these systems.
So
it's the most capable platform we have, Matt. And what we're doing right now is we have a plan to get to 80% mission-capable rates by 2030. And what you know...
And if you don't, what will be the accountability for Lockheed Martin?
So we are holding Lockheed Martin to task each and every day.
I mean, it's a good line of questioning, and I can't help but think that Gates just, like, zeroed in on him and realized he was... Now, to be fair, they did this briefing at 1:30 a.m. on a Friday night.
Oh.
No, I'm joking.
No, I understand. Man.
J.D. Pence, surface-to-air missile system so capable.
Wait, what?
Surface missile system capable.
Service system.
It's the most capable we got.
That is Hegseth's...
The strongest stuff.
Hegseth's chief of staff? Is that true?
Yes.
So, I've thought about this before, because he said that he was all clean. That was what he promised to the Senate for his confirmation hearing, Pete Hegseth. So he's got to have a guy that goes out to the liquor store and gets it for him.
He's a gopher.
I would think that maybe this guy is the gopher. Maybe this guy is the gopher and got a little bit too into the stash. And
it's a little bit of a tax. I know, and I bring some whiskey into
the... Just top this up with a little bit of water.
Tax.
Top it up with water.
And what I do is I buy a full case, and I just take a little bit from each bottle. That's the way I do it.
Sample.
Fill it up with water.
It's like when you raid your parents' liquor cabinet when you're in high school.
Oh,
just
my God.
Take just a little from each bottle, put it all together.
Yeah.
Yeah, we called that a suicide.
Yeah, it's... I have some not-so-clear memories from those situations.
Let's go... What else we got? Yeah.
You want to do this?
Honestly,
six.
if you're like using a weapon system, you should need to like blow into it like a breathalyzer. They need to install those for like
on the red button.
Just assume breathalyzer on the red button. Everybody here, it's like someone who has a pending DUI conviction or something and is on probation.
I mean, drug test the military contractors like the Palantir guy too.
Oh yeah, right. Well,
I mean, what the hell's going on?
Because you can't, I think, work in the government if you've ever admitted to smoking pot, and yet you have these guys like blackout drunk,
and you're making them like admirals.
Exactly.
To be fair, there's also a long tradition in the Defense Department. John Tower, all right, wasn't he? Did they not allow Tower to join because he was? I think he was a senator, and he may have had too much of a drinking problem. But they'll send those guys over there.
I mean, what was it, Kissinger with Nixon, where you hear the ice in their glass?
All over the Nixon
recording?
Tapes. Yeah. All over the Nixon tapes, you can hear ice clacking against glass because the recorder is in the desk that they're setting their scotch on.
Right.
If you have been following the news at all over the past week, you know that President Trump pardoned Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was the former president of Honduras. And last year, Hernandez was convicted on drug trafficking and weapons charges, sentenced to 45 years in prison. He, prosecutors said Mr. Hernandez was key to a scheme that lasted more than 20 years and brought more than 500 tons of cocaine into the United States. It was a 2-week trial in Manhattan. It involved like references of bags of cash, a machine gun with Hernandez's name emblazoned on it, bribes from the drug lord Joaquin Guzman or El Chapo. It was an extended case. And I think the first he was elected in 2013. And I think the case started under the Trump administration, if I'm not mistaken. At least I know that Beauvais was working on it. You may have heard of that, or you may be a senator.
Eric Schmidt.
Yes. Here he is.
In the Senate. And Senator, let me just begin where we left off with Congressman Smith. Do you support this pardon of the former Honduran president?
I'm not familiar with the facts or circumstances, but I think what's telling here is to try to imply that somehow President Trump is soft on drug smuggling is just ridiculous.
Pause it for one second.
It's totally ridiculous.
What's amazing is he's not familiar with the facts or the circumstances around the pardon of this drug kingpin. But he does know enough that it has to do with drugs coming into the country. Remember, the other story that maybe he hasn't heard of, even though he's on the Armed Services Committee, is that we are unilaterally bombing boats that aren't even headed to the United States because ostensibly they're bringing drugs in which could harm people. And yet, that same week, Donald Trump is pardoning a guy who was responsible for, what is it, how many tons? 500 tons of cocaine coming into the United States.
And only half of that went to Don Jr.
Exactly.
I mean, he got a pardon, your son's connect.
Drug smuggling is just ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. He's provided border security like we've never seen before. And the fact is, these cartels now, because the southern border is closed, they've gone to the high seas. So President Trump is acting with his core Article II powers.
Can I just point out, when I think it was H.W. Bush was really going on the drug war, they were coming in through the Gulf of Mexico. And so we needed to do a bunch of stuff there. And then they started going over the Rio Grande. And now we're just moving them back to where they were coming in like 25 years ago.
Also, like the way they all talk like
well,
Trump
they
now.
Supposedly don't come via the Gulf of Mexico. They come via the Pacific now. And the admiral himself apparently told senators that boat was not headed to the United States.
Right.
That it was headed to Suriname and apparently to just hook up with another boat that was going to send drugs to Europe. Go ahead.
Two powers. No serious legal expert would doubt that the president has authority to blow narco-terrorists out of the water who are poisoning 100,000 Americans every year. If you watched the SEC championship game yesterday, the Big Ten championship game,
God.
Combine those two stadiums with the number of people there, that's how many people are dying each and every year from the poison that's coming from these narco-terrorists. So the fact is, George, President Trump has been delegated the authority by Congress to designate terrorist organizations. He's done that. He sent a letter to Congress saying he was going to initiate these strikes. We've had regular briefings about it, including from Secretary of State Rubio, including from other high-ranking officials in the Department of Defense. He's executing those. And so now what we have now are Democrats who have such X-ray vision and clairvoyance that they know the intentions of narco-terrorists on boats, yet we're so blind to see that they had a president for 4 years that was operating as a vegetable in Joe Biden. So, you know, forgive me if I'm a little skeptical that this isn't all about politics and trying to take out Secretary Hegseth. That's what this whole thing's been about, George. They didn't want him confirmed. They didn't want a realist in place. They didn't want to shift from their pet projects around the world and trying to build democracies in the sands of the Middle East by the barrel of a gun. We have core national interests at stake, the homeland in the Western Hemisphere, and the rise of China. That's what this administration is focused on. The Democrats are just upset about that, and they try to create some controversy each and every week, and it goes nowhere.
What do you mean?
Oh, no, no, you asked him again.
You're not familiar with the facts and circumstances of the pardon. It's
go back a little bit. I'm sorry. So we just get this question clean.
Each and every week, and it goes nowhere.
What do you mean you're not familiar with the facts and circumstances of the pardon? It's been well reported all across the country. He's the former president of Honduras. He was convicted of conspiring to bring in 400 tons of cocaine into the United States, also guns and other materials. It's been front page news across the country. Aren't you curious about that?
Well, I'm curious about your pushback on that particular point. With your previous guest, you had zero pushback because he's giving the Democrat talking points like you spew every single week, which is probably why your ratings are so bad. But to make the point, what I'm saying is that you're trying to divert here the attention from what the American people actually support. 75% of Americans support us blowing narco terrorists out of the water.
But the question is actually premised on the idea that if you say this is so popular, why would Donald Trump pardon one of the biggest drug importers into this country?
Go ahead, Matt.
The way that they talk about these deaths is so gross. They don't care about these deaths at all. About 200,000 people deaths caused in this country by prescription opioid, abuse of prescription opioids, the Sackler family. But that doesn't really gel with the narrative they want to do, which is to use military power to just control the world. Like those people, who cares? We're not going to do anything about them. Actually, we're going to like pardon all sorts of corporate criminals and like international criminals, but just feel content that we're doing violence against brown people, and then you could be happy about it.
And I'm glad you brought up the Sacklers, because I made sure to look up this date here that I had it right, and it was towards the end of the Trump administration when the DOJ reached that settlement with Purdue that was widely considered to be a very easy penalty that I don't think that they had to acknowledge any wrongdoing. The Sackler family, worth an estimated $13 billion, only had to cover $225 million in civil penalties without acknowledging any wrongdoing. And this was under the Trump administration. So instead of actually addressing the people that just turbocharged the opioid crisis and addiction crisis in this country, we're going to kill dozens of innocent fishermen off the coast of Venezuela as a pretext to invade them for their oil, and then pretend it's about you and pretend it's about the opioid crisis and what people have experienced across this country. And when overdose deaths started going down, that was under Joe Biden, in part because of his administration's policies about Narcan and harm prevention, harm reduction, I'm sorry, that the Trump administration completely scrapped.
Let's move to some other policies of the Trump administration, that is having their thugs pepper spray sitting members of Congress. Here is in Tucson, Arizona, Adelita Grijalva.
Grijalva. I think. I have a hard time with it too now.
Who was only recently signed in. We should say, the guy from Tennessee,
immediately
who got elected to Congress, 24 hours, signed in. The Democrat, Grijalva, I can't say your name.
I'm sorry.
It took like, 35, 40 days? Well, here she is talking about, on the front lines arguing with ICE and...
She gets pepper sprayed.
She gets pepper sprayed. Here we go.
Watch out, watch out.
Hey, put it down. Put it down. Put it down.
Yellow City member Congress. Stop. You guys need to clear now.
Oh, jeez. It's fired. Pepper balls.
Pepper balls.
Watch out, watch out.
I guess she didn't get pepper sprayed. It was they're firing pepper balls at her.
Yeah, insane. They this is not like the only sitting member of Congress who's a Democrat who the Trump administration has completely denied or like violated their rights, including as lawmakers, but also just as human beings there. There was that rep in New Jersey that was prevented from seeing the facility. There have been many more instances of that.
This is about fascism versus democracy. Who has authority in a situation like this? Is it the armed thugs, or is it their representatives of the people?
I mean, they were already comfortable with denying 700,000 Arizonans their representative for what? How long?
40 days.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. It's about the people that care about representation, the people that care about sheer force and fascism.
Here is another clip. This one's coming from Minneapolis, and protests have been really strong out there in Minneapolis. And here is an ICE, a border patrol agent, not sure which one it is, basically just admitting that they're violating the Constitution.
No!
Here we go. Hold on 1 second. We're just going to get this up. This is from
South Minneapolis.
NPR News.
You hear those whistles.
We are performing an immigration act. He's not giving us the information we need to release it. If he tells us the number, he's gone. He's carrying some cash away. We are identifying who he is. By that point, we want to know if there's a warrant.
But they don't even know you.
All right, pause it. Here it is. Okay, so here's the bottom line. If they're on private property and they need to have probable cause before they do anything, or they need to have a warrant. You cannot have a warrant unless you have a specific person named in that warrant or for a specific thing. Like, we're going into a place because we think at this specific location, there's evidence of this specific crime. If the if what you're doing is trying to find out if you're trying to arrest someone you think is an undocumented immigrant, you must know their name. You must know who it is that you're going after. This is just some rando that they saw that they decided must be undocumented. And so they're saying, if he tells us his name, we'll come back with a warrant. That's not the way it works.
Yeah.
That's not the way it works. Here is, let's just go to this quickly. Here is Zohran Mamdani. He is the mayor-elect of New York City. And he's making it very, very explicit as to what your rights are when dealing with ICE, because he knows that ICE are coming. And you've got a Eric Adams administration, which has basically opened the doors for ICE to come on into the city. Here is Mamdani basically giving us a slight insight into what the strategy is going to be from the mayor, and that is to be explicit in letting people know their rights.
And this is useful even if you're not in New York City, because yes, it gives you a sense of how you can protect your community, even if you don't have a mayor like Mamdani.
Last weekend, ICE attempted to raid Canal Street and detain our immigrant neighbors. As mayor, I'll protect the rights of every single New Yorker, and that includes the more than 3 million immigrants who call this city their home. But we can all stand up to ICE if you know your rights. If you encounter ICE, these are the things that every New Yorker should know. First, ICE cannot enter into private spaces like your home, school, or private area of your workplace without a judicial warrant signed by a judge. That looks like this.
If ICE does not have a judicial warrant signed by a judge, you have the right to say, I do not consent to entry, and the right to keep your door closed.
Sometimes ICE will show you paperwork that looks like this and tell you that they have the right to arrest you. That is false.
ICE is legally allowed to lie to you, but you have the right to remain silent.
If you're being detained,
pause it for a second.
Always
this is very important. And just go back a little bit because I want to hear that other part. ICE has the legal right to lie. They have the legal right to lie to you. And well, I want to reference this story. Is it okay?
Yeah, that's totally fine.
So Brian's got a friend whose parents are legal, but ICE had a suspicion that there may be an undocumented immigrant in their house. They approached the house. This was in California. They approached the house. They claimed that there was a problem with the water supply. They said they were from the water department. They said that the water could be poisonous, and they wanted to come in to test it. And fortunately, this woman was suspicious as to, like, why are they wearing cargo pants? Why are they wearing the same sort of, like, khaki combo of
combat boots
and did not open the door for them. Said, you can go test the hose. And apparently at that point, they just laughed and walked off and said, we'll be back. Yeah. They can lie to you. You do not have to open the door. And if you have any reason to suspect that they are ICE, you just don't let them in. You don't say anything and you don't let them in. All right. Let's keep going.
That is false. ICE is legally allowed to lie to you, but you have the right to remain silent.
If you're being detained, you may always ask, am I free to go, repeatedly, until they answer you.
You are legally allowed to film ICE, as long as you do not interfere with an arrest.
It is important to remain calm during any interaction with ICE or law enforcement. Do not impede their investigation, resist arrest, or run. One last thing. New Yorkers have a constitutional right to protest. And when I'm mayor, we will protect that right. New York will always welcome immigrants. And I will fight each and every day to protect, support, and celebrate our immigrant brothers and sisters.
This is also important. If they stop you and they keep asking you your name or whatever it is, you just calmly say, am I being detained? Do I have the right to, can I go? Because they have to address you at that point. And if you say it over and over again, they will realize that you know your rights. And hopefully somebody is also filming this while this happens. And that's basically it. There you go. Let's go to some of the IMs, shall we, ladies and gentlemen?
Let's.
Corporations ate my baby. I learned a lot from Ben. Thank you. Foster Brooks was also on Carson and Carol Burnett. Yes, he was. Jackie C. Zoran Mamdani draws a line between City Hall and mass deportations. We played that video. The Mill Rind. Sam, remember the WB frog? Pepe is coming back. Krusty Gnome. It's just more money laundering. It's that simple, I feel like. I think that's the... Tim Pool was a victim. Candace is just bullying Tim Pool at this point. It's like an adult fighting a dumb child.
Sort of like a...
Do we have...
I don't know if it's an adult.
Yeah, it's the right word. A bigger kid.
Exactly.
Beating up a smaller kid.
Kowalski from Nebraska. Howdy, Majority Report. I wanted to thank you for promoting my YouTube channel, Prairie Fire. Prairie Fire Neb?
Neb, yep.
Your promotion took my views from 39K to 50K. Hopefully, woo! I'll have a new video out tomorrow. On to the heavy stuff. Today, December 8th, marks the 22nd anniversary of my father passing away from a stress-related heart attack at only age 45, leaving behind a wife, four children between 8 and 14 years old. I've told the story before, but it's important to remind myself and explain to others the importance of Medicare for All, because I believe my dad would be alive today if this for-profit system was left behind for two reasons. One, the cost would be less. So those needing health care can just go get it. Two, being free of the toxic masculinity we have culturally from the current system, which tells men to suck it up and ignore the pain and keep working, will go away. Call me a bleeding heart, but I think children shouldn't have to bury their parents because the system needs more profit for healthcare CEOs and stockholders. And the media wonders why we cheer for Luigi. Healthcare is a human right. Deny this right is an act of violence. This will go out for your dad, Kowalski. You know, I don't know what else to say. You're absolutely right about all of it. Folks, go check out Prairie Fire Neb. Metabot, look into the ICE agent that mauled someone with their dog in Vancouver, Washington, so they could take them to an ICE facility for medical attention. Jesus.
If I remember that story correctly, it started with them asking, saying he hit his car or something. That was the way he got him out of the house.
Jesus.
Oh, right.
They literally have the same tactics as what you'd hear about child predators having.
Yeah.
Like,
Candy in the van.
Yeah. Or can you help me with my dog? That was like what I was warned about as a little girl.
Yeah. I mean, there's where did I see this? Someone was talking about like a backlog for FBI investigations into online, like Roblox, like pedophiles like going on Roblox and stuff like that. They're all pulled off of those cases.
Yes.
And looking into kitchens to see if people are documented or not.
Yep.
Just one little palate cleanser thing. Do you guys remember this story? Amazon's Just Walk Out technology relies on hundreds of workers in India watching you shop. There's an amazing clip here, and it looks like something happened with the Elon. They have these new robots here. And if this is what it purports to be, just watch this image of a Tesla bot. It looks like what happens here is it gets done serving these waters, and then whoever was operating it took their headset off.
Oh, that's funny.
Causing the robot to malfunction. So here's this clip.
Oh!
That's so, what I used to drink as a caterer.
I was gonna say, that's me clocking out when I get home.
So he's lifting the headphones off and then falls backward?
No.
The robot stops working because the guy who is VR.
VR, and somebody's got a VR headset.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And then the person just walks off, doesn't realize that the robot is still like,
connected.
Relied on him.
Oh, gosh. That's so funny.
Do the people there realize it?
It seems like it. It's getting a lot of like news coverage. I want to see more of this story because that is such a. It's a great 6-second video clip to show what 2025 is
I want them to put some sound effects on it, like "Mamma Mia" falls down.
Elon's robots have been such a funny failure for like 10 years.
Yes.
I know.
Remember when he threw the ball bearing at the window and it just shattered?
Oh, on the Cybertruck.
They were supposed to unveil some robots and they weren't ready, so they put like dancers in robot costumes. Remember that? And they just had humans in spandex.
They've only got a little bit beyond that point at this point. Anyway, all your lives are going to be better because of all the stuff
these guys
are cooking up any day now.
More tax breaks for this.
Bob Brooks for Congress. Please interview candidate for Congress Bob Brooks for Swing District Pennsylvania 7. He's in a crowded Democratic primary, needs to outraise former Republican prosecutor who won last quarter's fundraising numbers among all candidates. Bob has the endorsement of Bernie and is Medicare for All and is a union leader.
Hmm.
Who should
Pennsylvania 7?
Yeah, Bob Brooks. Miss Kitty, fewer products were bought, not less.
You built this audience, Sam.
How dare
this
you.
Is your fault.
What? Who could possibly show up here and listen to the show on a regular basis and worry about grammar or pronunciation?
Not nobody who knows what they're listening to.
Felonious Monk. Trump is the fourth U.S. president I have applied to for a pardon. If you go to the office of pardon attorney, you can see this message. Restoration of firearm rights is the main reason federal felons like myself ask for a pardon, is to get our firearm rights back. Tomo Flink. Happy Fun Day Monday, folks. The EU has fined X 120 million euros. Last week, Trump testicle caddy Chris Landau was in Europe last week whining about Europe spending its increased military expenditure on European contractors, not American ones. It's almost as if Europe needs to spend more on defense as code for Europe needs to line the pockets of U.S. defense contractors who line my pockets every election. I pray to Pesci. Is she drunk? She sounded about 3 seconds away from just grunting and pointing. I don't know.
Oh, the woman, I think, from Fox Business.
Oh, yeah. Dark Soul, that Fox News host, is growling there. Had a very crime vibe to it.
Crime. The growling is so good.
War crimes.
Majid, I think we should bring back Roman numerals. Chevron, credit denials are at the highest levels of all recorded history, which is a metric we have records for going back to ancient Sumeria. It's just overblown, though, for sure.
And we don't have any more extra money. Like.
Rumble watcher Polly Machadard suggests that Sam will continue saying 2025 until February 2nd, 2026.
It's a good over-under.
I mean, could we get that going there? Like, I want to undermine some stuff.
Do a little insider trading?
But my God, we blew it with the whole...
with the Polymarket thing?
Yes.
I know, but...
We could have made much money.
Who has the time?
This could be the Polymarket studios.
Anna Kasparian claimed that we were sponsored by...
Kamala Harris. Yeah.
And we think it was because she watched a YouTube ad.
Doesn't have YouTube Premium?
And on our
the
show...
The neck must not be paying out.
But there was a Polymarket betting line as to whether we had or not, and we knew we hadn't, but we couldn't buy. We couldn't.
It was banned in the U.S.
Banned in the U.S. at that time.
Yeah. Shout out to any overseas MR listeners who got in on this. Did Kamala buy ads? I like how it has our logo next to it.
Wait, outcome? What did they determine the outcome?
Does it say that?
Yeah, it says outcome.
No.
Gotcha.
So
So somebody who got in on day one made a killing.
Yeah.
And look at that bump on March 9th. Was that when I said, like, wait, maybe we did get the...
Maybe.
Oh. If I was working here then, I would have just drove to Canada on the weekend and put in a bet. It's not that bad.
Said something really coy, like, well, maybe she meant, never mind.
Yeah.
God did that.
I blame you for re-downloaded my DraftKings app this week.
don't say that in front of Matt.
Sorry.
Sam, Emma, especially in this case, because I'm old enough to remember 20-ish years ago on the original MR with Janine, where you highlighted the documentary Why We Fight and interviewed the filmmaker Eugene Jaraki, pretty much the same exact story as today's guest, or the more things change, .. Jaraki has a new documentary. We just heard about that. We may have him back on, actually. The artist. Sam, I've been subscribed to you for almost 10 years. Can I get a shofar and a plug to my little podcast, Talking Over Transformers? The Earist. The podcast is Talking Over Transformers, and this goes to... Tom in Wisconsin, while we're shouting out candidates, check out Kyle Blomquist in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Michigan won. He seems very good. Let's go to clip number 10. This is George Stephanopoulos again with Who's Rachel Scott?
I'm not sure.
Do we know who?
Oh. Rachel Scott. She's in the administration, right? Yeah. Rachel Scott. Or maybe not. Sorry.
What is that name?
Not the cleanest. She works for ABC. Okay.
Okay. Here's George Stephanopoulos talking. It's not completely inconsequential, and it's something that I would imagine is going to change at one point. But here's Donald Trump. This is one of the ways that an authoritarian uses their power to revise history and try and make their legacy last. George Stephanopoulos.
Trump administration announcing revised list of free entry days to America's national parks. President Trump's birthday has been added to the list. Martin Luther King Day has been taken off. Senior political correspondent Rachel Scott is at the White House. Good morning, Rachel.
George, good morning to you. And this is an overhaul of the calendar. The National Park Service this morning making changes to which day Americans can enter national parks for free. Now adding President Trump's birthday, which falls on Flag Day, and removing Martin Luther King Jr. Day and also Juneteenth. Other changes include adding 4th of July weekend, Constitution Day in September, and charging foreign visitors an entry fee. The Department of Interior did not respond to our request for comment on why MLK Day and Juneteenth were removed. It is worth noting that MLK Day was listed as a free day of entry during President Trump's first term. And some Democrats are now criticizing the Trump administration over these changes, calling it foul. Earlier this year, the National Park Service did face backlash after removing content and information about Harriet Tubman on its website. That information was later restored in April. But again, this morning, no word on why these changes were made, removing MLK Day and Juneteenth from that calendar, George.
I think I can come up with a couple of reasons.
Big mystery.
I don't know. What do those two things have to do with each other? What are the similar aspects about it?
They both committed mortgage fraud.
Exactly.
They're Klansmen. I don't know. Like, we have Klansmen. MAGA is just the Klan Democrats joining the white supremacist business Republicans. That's what MAGA is.
Yeah. Well,
where we're at.
Well, I feel like, Matt, you're ignoring the fact that you get in free on my birthday. So it's not just Klansmen and those Republicans who want taxes gone. There's also, I've got a little extra spiciness in it by putting my, it's sort of like, also like the new monarchians.
He wanted to go glamping for his birthday. I mean, he wants to go out into the wilderness to get one with nature, bathe in a brook. Isn't that what you think of?
It's like when the mafia guys, when they have their birthday, they go into the neighborhood and they throw money on the streets. Yeah. That's what it basically is.
Right.
If anyone can find me evidence of Trump being at, oh, he visited Gettysburg. Okay.
I visited Gettysburg, but only to root for the Confederate.
A field that's very easy to land a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'd love to see him at Yellowstone.
Climbing El Capitan.
I want to get out and pet the buffalo.
There's a couple of things going on that we haven't really paid that much attention to, but actually have, like, probably will have material import down the road. And that is the sort of both simultaneous implosion of some right-wing talkers' audience and an incredible amount of infighting that is going on that I think will ultimately be pretty consequential, at least for the near term. I almost don't know where to start with this. You first had a lot of like right-wing dissent around Israel. On one side, you had the principal anti-Semites who American firsters. I don't know that there's really a huge gulf between those two people.
No.
But they did not like our involvement with Israel, So sometimes good things can come from bad places.
They're basically Christian nationalists.
Yes.
It's Nick Fuentes. It's Candace Owens.
But that's the non-koofy Christian nationalists.
Yes.
And I guess like – and they they started to attack people like Ben Shapiro,
mm-hmm.
who Ben Shapiro trying to be an American firster, but also tied for first with Israel.
Yes. Well, I don't even know if he'd say tied, but we can quibble with that. But it is interesting. Like, I mean, Ben Shapiro was so cool with Candace Owens' open anti-Semitism when she was employed at the Daily Wire.
Hitler apology.
She literally said while under at the Daily Wire that Hitler's problem was not that he kept it confined to Germany, but that he had expansionist aims and he wasn't Germany first. Newsflash, there were Jewish Germans who would probably disagree with that. And Ben Shapiro held on to her throughout that entire saga. Also the Kanye West saga when Kanye was going out there. She was defending him. Even Shapiro was defending him. Kanye said, what was it? Hitler, I forget exactly what he said about Hitler that was positive, but it was open Hitler apology.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, my point is just that Candace Owens was very defensive of those two, obviously, like, anti-Semitic statements by Kanye and then by herself. And Shapiro had her on until she was speaking about anti-Zionism. And that's when they parted ways.
That's when they parted ways. And that has morphed in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination into some, like, swirling conspiracy theories that started with Israel took Charlie Kirk out because ostensibly Charlie Kirk was turning on Israel, which is quite unclear that that was the case.
No, he just wanted to still have Tucker Carlson come to TPUSA events. That's all it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we should say, like, he wrote some text, I think, to Candace Owens or to somebody 2 days before he was assassinated that indicated that maybe he was going to turn against Israel or he wasn't going to take. But presumably Israel had been planning months before this assassination. And, you know, there's a lot of people that had to be paid out. But then the conspiracy theories. And look, I'm not in a position to judge really, like, and I haven't really followed it, but it's involved other TPUSA individuals that Candace Owens has been pushing, saying that, you know, that they were all sort of conspired against it. And now they're addressing Candace Owens. And you should just know that Shapiro's show's numbers have cratered.
Yep.
Charlie Kirk's show's numbers have cratered, and everybody seems to be lining up on one side or the other of this, and then there's a couple of peacemakers in between, and here is PBD trying to be a peacemaker. Now, remember, the last time we checked on Patrick Bet-David, he had the brilliant idea to deal with Israel's
do the roast
PR problems for committing a genocide to allow some of Israel's comedic criticizers to do a roast with Benjamin Netanyahu for like 2 or 3 years.
A Tom Brady style roast.
Yeah, Tom Brady style roast. Just give it to him.
Roast the ones we love.
Yes, let a little air out of the tires, I guess, as they would say.
We used to have Nuremberg. Now we have Netflix.
Now, exactly. And now, of course, Israel is still in hot water because they did not subscribe to, they didn't take his advice. But now Patrick Bet-David is going to talk about, like, what's going on with TPUSA invited Candace Owens on for a debate. She will not go there because she's afraid of being assassinated. And she thinks that Erica Kirk was behind it. And it's a little suspicious. The whole thing's suspicious.
It's a little weird. I mean, isn't Charlie one of her best friends? Seems to have a pretty poor relationship with his wife.
You know, it happens.
Sometimes.
It happens. Your best friends, like, you know. And so here's PBD. But then the things get a little bit weirder, too, after this.
For you. Go there to feel safe. Because she's right. She needs to feel safe.
She should.
But at the same time... to me, if this is like, there's a part of me that's like, go with the Macron story, right? Go with the Macron story. Tom, what is that? Does that have to do with the story or?
No, I was just.
Okay. So go with the Macron story. So with the Macron story, there's
putting out that we're wearing the same blazer.
Yeah. I could have started this after that.
Well, but what happened was that Tom's putting something else up there on the screen. And that happens here. Sometimes you get a little distracted. But he is now saying that just to be clear, Candace Owens afraid to go to TPUSA onto the Charlie Kirk show because she's nervous about. And I don't know that I would go into their lair. I don't know.
Do it remote.
But here is, Patrick Bet-David is like saying maybe it's time for her to just focus on the Macron story. The Macron story, incidentally, is that Candace Owens is convinced that Macron's wife is actually a trans woman, and they're suing her, I believe.
And she seems to be the only person on the right that is insistent about this conspiracy theory in a way that where it's like, you know, sometimes it's like you see, I feel like Charlie Kirk was doing a bit of a character. Even Ben Shapiro plays it up because they're so cynical. She's genuinely insane.
Rogan believes it, by the way.
Oh, Rogan does?
Oh, there's I'll tell you something. There is a lot of people who believe what Candace Owens. There's a lot of people because she's onto something.
But I just okay, fair enough. In right wing media, it feels like this is her flag that she's planted. It's a little insane. But
it's been helping her numbers significantly.
And it's clear why PBD would want her to focus on that instead of the infighting on the right.
Here we go. Mm-hmm.
The Macron story, Tom. What is that? Does that have to do with the story or?
No, I was just.
Okay, so go with the Macron story. So with the Macron story, there's a part of it that you're interested in the Macron story, right? Yes. Where it's like, I want to know. Yes. Okay, let's keep going. I want to know what's going on, how this thing's going to end. But with the Turning Point USA guys, I don't know if you really... you realize, like, without TPUSA, Trump doesn't win. I don't know if people are, like, thinking about it that way. Forget about all this feud and oh my God, and what's going on. And I think I'm on her side, I'm on their side. It's not she's this, she's a scotch. Set all that stuff aside. If there's no Turning Point USA, Trump does not win in 2024.
Yep.
Perfect. If I'm the Democrats, if I'm Qatar, if I'm anybody that wants Democrats back in, dude, I have to dismantle Turning Point USA. And she's helping in that process. So
can you pause it for a second? So I just am trying to put little just breadcrumbs here because we mentioned this in the Tim Pool segment last week about his meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu and then in that meeting, I think it was Jewish Insider reported that he asked him about Qatar's influence on the internet space and how it's making essentially kids into radicals against Israel is the thrust of it.
Buying creators, I mean, is the implication.
There's just something to note about the focus on Qatar when it comes up completely in a way that makes very little sense when the subject of Israel comes up. And I just think people should flag that when they see some of these creators bring it up out of nowhere, because that's a Zionist talking point.
But what's happening also right now is Tucker Carlson went to Qatar and interviewed, Qatari
official. The Prime Minister, I think.
The Prime Minister.
Yeah.
And so... this is all part of this like interracine war. I'm not pronouncing that correctly. And what I love, Patrick Bet-David, it's like this guy's giving a lot of advice to people. He is in manect mode.
Right.
But he's doing it for free. And apparently that's because Candace Owens is not calling manect to find out what she should be doing in this situation. And so he's saying, stick, don't do the TPUSA thing. Now, I want to say this. If he thinks that people who want Republicans to lose in 2026 and 2028 are cheering on what's going on with this, he is correct.
Yes.
I want to make that clear. That's what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, the more disoriented the right is, the more incohesive it is, mm-hmm. if that's a word.
Incoherent, sure.
Well, incoherent, but non-cohesive.
Okay.
The better for society. But let's let him continue with this sage advice.
Democrats back in, dude, I have to dismantle Turning Point USA. And she's helping in that process. So now whether she's coming from a place of, you know, she's doing it because she's getting eyeballs. She's doing it because a dream she had with Charlie and Charlie told her this. Whether it's because she's funded. Whether it's because that's exactly what she believes. I don't care what those reasons are. Everybody has their own reasons for doing some things. And sometimes it doesn't make sense to you. And then it takes 10, 20 years to really learn the motive. It took us 4 years to realize what happened with the pipe bomber, right? The 4 or 5 years to realize.
5 years, yeah.
Yeah, to realize what's going on with the pipe bomber. We may not know what's going on here for a long time, but what we do know is the following. Turning Point USA falls. Someone is replacing those kids being fed. And then who is that? Name me the second biggest Turning Point USA organization that you trust. Name me who you trust above Turning Point USA, where the guy Charlie Kirk put it together. Then we have to make one of two things. Either Charlie Kirk was such a horrible leader that he picked people the wrong way, then we're questioning his character. Because you get judged for who you choose. Okay? And so Candace's argument is if Turning Point USA is that bad, then that's questioning his character. And it's wherewithal to pick the right leadership team on what to do with the company.
Hey,
okay. Look at Tom and nodding his head. Yes.
We're actually the Charlie defenders here.
Yeah. That seems like a little bit. Why are they pretending like all of the decisions about TPUSA were made in Charlie's interests?
Well,
that seems to be very motivated reasoning to say that beyond the grave he would have approved of all of these things.
Well, apparently, I mean...
Also, the people he hired around him, I think, is the implication. That why would Charlie... Like, because Candace is literally saying, like, his chief of staff is doing suspicious stuff immediately after Charlie. So, right. Charlie, if you say that those people are suspicious, you're actually questioning Charlie Kirk, because Charlie Kirk is the one who
hired not
them.
Just questioning Charlie Kirk. You're questioning his character as a person.
And judgment.
As a person.
Wow.
So he is actually better friends with Charlie Kirk than Candace Owens is what he's saying. It's fascinating. Is there any more to this?
No, that's probably good.
That's about as good as it gets here. But there's another strand. So you'll notice that PBD is taking the same tact that Tim Pool took, which is... This is destroying the, hurting the Republicans' chances in the midterms, which I think, okay, maybe. It's not helping it, probably. And Candace Owens shot back like, I don't care about the midterms. This is my friend I'm defending here.
Hear, hear, Candace. Righteous.
So PBD says this. Then Milo Yiannopoulos goes on Tim Pool show. Now, Yiannopoulos was just on another show. What show was that? Was it with Tucker?
He was on Tucker.
He claimed that maybe Charlie Kirk was gay?
That was also on Tim.
Okay. He did this on Tim Pool's show. He said that in passing that he thought that Charlie Kirk was gay.
I would just say, look at the text that he sent to Candace Owens about Nicki Minaj.
And with that, I think, is what he said. Is that okay, he was talking about...
Because I'll say, I saw the sex, I'm like, wait a second.
They were girls.
Like that is not what a straight man would text. Now, and then on Tim Pool, this is what... this is what Milo Yiannopoulos decides to go all in. Earlier in this, he mentions that Charlie Kirk was gay. Santos, George Santos, is on this show, and he can't believe that Milo Yiannopoulos is saying this. And then Milo Yiannopoulos also says, repeats the claim that Benny Johnson is gay. Now,
oh, come on.
There has been a lot of people who have made this claim on the internet, on X. And so it's not terribly shocking to hear Yiannopoulos say this, but here he is getting indignant about it.
One of the most distinctive things about the right wing in this country is its homosexual overtones. Benny Johnson posts pictures of his children every 2 days. It's weird. And everybody knows what went on with Benny Johnson in those lobbies and in those hotel rooms at SAS. Everybody knows.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
Men. Pause it for a second. Younger men. SAS is students, student action something. It's like a right. It's a TPUSA event.
I do like
Student Action Summit. Now go back a little bit here because
Santos is trying to act above it because he can't make any enemies right now.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Me? It's got to be like Andy Cohen.
I know. I know. Yes. I know. You were fun when you were messy. Now you're just like there.
Yeah. Lobbies and in those hotel rooms at SAS. Everybody knows.
I don't. No. I don't know what you're talking about.
Men, younger men, not underage. At least I don't know that. His His wife was crying drunk in the lobby, three sasses in a row, about how her husband was upstairs with boys.
Come on.
But go ask her.
Come on.
Go ask her.
Come on, Milo.
Go ask her.
Milo, aren't you ever scared of getting sued? You say I'm sitting here like, yeah, I am humbled by the lore and your ability.
The audacity.
There's no teapots in this room right now to express how I feel.
George, I have said these things about people for 20 years and never once in my career been sued. I've issued 3 corrections in my entire journalistic career because I get my facts right and people know that they do not want to go through discovery.
Actually, I want to say this.
I've never been sued for anything I've ever said about anyone.
The one thing I can... I need to say this. I need to say this.
Because I'm right.
The most terrifying thing about Milo...
No one contradicted it. It seems like Tim Pool moved on, and then George Santos was like, "Are you worried about getting sued?"
Now this is in response to. Let's show the Benny Johnson. Then, his wife Kate, I guess is her name, tweets out something that implies she's going to sue Milo Yiannopoulos. I mean, it's so gossipy and stupid. But the fact of the matter is that like Benny Johnson was important enough for the Russians to pay him hundreds of thousands of dollars to as well as Tim Pool and whatnot.
He's a mouthpiece for Trump.
Mouthpiece for Trump. And so, you know, this is going to be relevant on some level. Any time they're spending on this is times that they're not doing bad things for the country.
Demonizing Somalis.
Exactly. And so here's Benny Johnson responding after his wife. He says, I am duty bound to take action.
What a masculine man.
No pun
man.
Intended.
Duty. You know, here's what's so weird about this. Incidentally, there's a great study that shows like all the, you know, that, we'll talk about this piece more in the future, but that the traditional, the trad wife stuff that's going on, that like men want like gender roles to be protected, actually inhibits the number of children that people have, because women don't want to be stuck with having to do all the work for kids, broadly speaking. And so when these guys have these traditional male,
yes,
this is what a real man does. The majority of women are like, that just sounds like you don't want to do any of the work around the house. You're going to just leave it to me. So bye. Anyway, so here's Benny Johnson. I am duty bound. I got news for you. I can't think of something more performative than the idea that I am duty bound. Like, it's, you're going after my family, I'm going to mess with you, but because I don't like it.
Not because I am duty bound to pretend I am a actual husband.
Right. This role that has been assigned to me is one that I must play for you on the internet.
I'm obligated now. Yes. Because of the
yes, I am obligated by the... Okay, so I am duty bound to take action to protect my family against those who maliciously defame and attack us. More to come on that. Now, okay, he's saying us, because I think Milo also said that his wife was a swinger or something.
And that she looked old.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if that's, you know, I think that's more of an opinion. So attack us. More to come on that soon. Pray for healing for some really sick and delusional people. Jesus is about redemption. The legal system is about justice. Happy Sunday.
He didn't say which part of that was defamatory. Just throwing that out there. It could have been
well,
any
more to come, Emma.
More to come. I can't wait.
And here is Milo responding to them. Dear free speech warrior Benny, dear Kate, a few notes for your consideration.
Like
I know
finger.
More about defamation than any lawyer you will hire. Benny is a public figure. Malice is a non-starter. I have receipts, and the truth is a total defense against any claim of defamation or libel. Do you want to lose a defamation case to Milo Yiannopoulos, of all people, about whether or not you are gay? Do you want to even fight one? The people who have poured money into making you a big deal are about to lose their entire investment.
Putin.
Now, here's the thing, is that Milo Yiannopoulos, on an earlier trip to Tim Pool, said at one point, right-wing talkers, it's all about faking it until you make it. And he implied, if not explicitly said, that there was a lot of like fake viewership for Ben Shapiro. Now, we know...
Milo Yiannopoulos said that?
Yes. This was the last time he was on Tim Pool. And we know that Ben Shapiro spent millions of dollars advertising on Facebook. I think this was about 5 years ago. And now his audience is cratering. And it may be the case that that was always just sort of like... There was
mirage.
A mythical audience.
It's a money mirage.
But the Daily Wire just doesn't have the resources that it may be used to because they spend all of their money on those
Lady Ballers.
Children's TV shows. And Lady Ballers was actually successful
was
for them,
most,
right?
Yeah.
It was the children's programming that sunk them. That yeah, it turns out kids want to watch like Bluey and Miss Rachel and not whatever bespoke conservative propaganda
Whitey.
Your parents subscribe to.
The people who have poured money into making you a big deal are about to lose their entire investment. I know more about your marriage than you think I do.
Oh, my God.
And I have evidence. And I have witnesses.
Wow.
I know who to subpoena. I know what questions to ask about nocturnal liaison dangereuse.
We have ghostwriting for him?
Dangereuse. Is it liaison dangereuse with chaps in assless chaps about being caught in flagrant delicto at conferences attended by students, some of whom may have been under 18? I guess we'll find out.
Wow.
It was a student action summit.
Wow.
Nobody cares about you, Kate. I'll say this. It was shitty of me to say you look old. I am a shitty person. I'll delete that if you want and apologize. It doesn't make me feel awesome to look back at those tweets. But you do look old. You look hideous. You look twice your age. Apparently you agree because you just took the video down that I took a screenshot from today.
Oh my God. So he'll delete the tweet calling her old, but just so you know, you look old and hideous and twice your age.
It makes me a C word to call you old looking, but it's not something you can sue over in America. If you're raw about people saying you're a swinger, maybe don't be a swinger, girl. Strange how rumors just take on a life of their own, especially given how notoriously prudish nurses are.
This is literally a storyline on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
Discovery will destroy your career beyond any possibility of redemption, Benny, which has never been my intention and never in my heart, because I believe that family is making you a better man, as I think it did Charlie Kirk. But this will be the inevitable result of your actions. I just want you to be honest because I believe that it's important and I believe that it is in the public interest to report on people who present one way and act another. There's an easy way out of this. Honestly, just tell your viewers who you are and what you've done and how you got better, if you have. You could be an inspiration to millions. Tell you what, I'll pledge to you right now. I'll cover the first $10,000 of your therapy with Dr. Nicolosi. That must be the doctor that converted Milo.
Made him so not gay anymore.
Made him not gay anymore. Where is it?
Dr. Joseph Nicolosi.
Mom! Why did you do that to me?
Yes,
that is a clip from a famous interview with somebody who'd gone through the therapy and was showing how he got rid of his gayness by taking a tennis racket and smacking a couch. That was bad.
That could be you, Benny.
That could be you.
Inspiration to all of us.
So I will cover the first 10,000 of your therapy with Dr. Nicolosi. Now, I wonder if that means that Milo's saying he needs a lot of therapy or whether Dr. Nicolosi is very, very, very expensive treatment.
I saw on Wikipedia, yeah, he's the leading conversion therapy guy in the United States, it appears.
Kate's ravenous, mossy bank will have to take care of itself.
Or was. He's dead. Sorry. Go on.
Oh, my gosh. Put this back up there. I know what that means. So with Dr. Nicolosi, Kate's ravenous mossy bank will have to take care of itself. I think I know what that means.
Mossy in British slang.
I
old-fashioned, dull or slow. Okay.
I wonder if that's a euphemism
of course it is. He said she's old. That's what I'm saying. Mossy, and then the bank is her genitalia.
That's what I thought. Yeah, okay, okay.
Yeah.
And so he's basically saying, like, she's not getting any conversion therapy for being a swinger. That's what he's saying there. Or we can both spend millions and I'll win. Is that really what you want? Yours in Christ or kisses? That depends on what day of the week it is. Your friend Milo.
He said Cunty with the K, and he says he's prayed the gay away, Milo Yiannopoulos. Or are we still?
I think that's kind of like it's just a premise for a bit at this point.
It's gotta be, right?
Yeah. It sort of always has been. Like, you remember when he said his, like, what is he, out of the gay black fiance, but now that's his, like, live-in servant or something like that?
No, wait a second.
It's all performance.
This is not over yet, because we still have one more tweet that has jumped into the fray, and of course, we're talking about Laura Loomer.
Yes.
This is number 13. This is Laura Loomer, who is responding to Milo, who said on Tim Pool that Charlie Kirk was gay.
And that video is at the bottom of this tweet if you want to check
it out. Well, let's play that clip. Yeah.
Entered into the record here.
Yeah. So I listen. We try not to do these gossipy things, but these are all big political voices in the Republican Party. This is, in many respects, the brain trust. And Laura Loomer is, of course, one of Donald Trump's top advisors.
MTG's.
TPUSA was one of the biggest operators of the Get Out the Vote for Trump in 2024. And here is Milo Yiannopoulos on Tim Pool's show making claims about Charlie Kirk.
I'm always a couple of days behind watching on the show because I've got, you know, I've got stuff going on. But somebody tweeted today that Candace said that she believed that they were about to get a divorce. I think he was gay. I think he was gay. And
come on, you know that I've criticized.
What?
Like, I'm sorry, Tim, but like, why would you even go there? Like, to say something? Like,
No.
The man's dead. You're calling now. You think he's gay.
That's when people can tell the truth. I'm always a couple of days behind.
I'm really enjoying George Santos being the responsible actor here. He's got to toe that line.
Yes.
Can't make any more enemies.
Like, do people remember that George Santos lied about so many things?
Yes. Didn't he steal from a veteran whose dog he was trying to get?
From a dog charity.
Yeah, dog charity. Yeah. This guy that wanted to help his sick dog anyway. Yeah, but he don't go there.
So
don't call him gay. That's the worst thing you can say about somebody.
Here is Laura Loomer.
The Republican Party is a bunch of guys calling each other gay.
Yep.
Here is Laura Loomer striking back. Marjorie Taylor Greene's intern and speechwriter, Milo Yiannopoulos, who spends a lot of his time living inside the Rome, Georgia home of Marjorie Taylor Greene, went on TimCast to say Charlie Kirk was about to divorce Erica Kirk before he died and that Charlie was gay. Milo also used the episode to say Candace cares more about Charlie than Erica Kirk cares about her own husband. Milo, who runs Marjorie Taylor Greene's social media and writes her speeches for her by his own admission, also claimed that Charlie hasn't been buried and could still even be alive. He claims that Charlie Kirk, I saw this, he claimed that Charlie Kirk has not been buried yet for whatever reason. I think he also implied that in that Instagram post that Erica Kirk did when she was saying, I love you.
The one that saved on your phone?
That accidentally got saved on my phone? Yeah, that one. That wasn't Charlie Kirk's body.
You don't,
because her hand was too large relative to his.
Oh, might be time for another Candace.
Another anomaly.
I mean, look, I don't know what is true and what's not true anymore about anything. But getting back to this, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Candace Owens, and Tucker were all together this week at Tucker's Christmas party in Nashville, Tennessee. Tucker Carlson also had Milo on his show this week to talk about homosexuality. Now, the same week Tucker had Milo on to talk about homosexuality, Milo's now calling Charlie gay.
Capitalized.
Tucker is still set to be the keynote speaker for the upcoming TPUSA AmFest.
Well, Charlie would have wanted that. I mean, I've seen texts about that stuff.
Yes.
It appears that all of the attacks on Charlie Kirk and TPUSA were organized and plotted at Tucker's Christmas party this week. It doesn't sound like a fun party. Again, Marjorie Taylor Greene should be pressed on why she allows Milo, a foreign national who was fired for pro-pedophilia comments, to work for her and live with her. He is allegedly paid through Isaiah Wortman, who served as the campaign manager for Marjorie Taylor Greene, who now employs Marjorie Taylor Greene's daughter, Lauren, as I have previously reported.
Tweeted?
Yeah, and reported. Well, she is a White House correspondent now. Nobody cares about, first of all, she hates Marjorie Taylor Greene. Laura Loomer does, obviously, because of her Zionism and also because, she's standing with Trump on this.
Competing for daddy's attention.
No one cares that Milo Yiannopoulos is like working with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Why does she think that this is some sort of dig? The people on the right are probably like, hell yeah. Marjorie Taylor Greene might, I don't even, this is crazy to say, I don't fully believe it, but maybe with younger Republicans, might have more credibility right now than Trump himself. I mean, with the Epstein stuff and with the fact that she's anti-Israel, if you're under 40 or under 35 and you're a Republican, who do you like more?
That would be an interesting poll to see, actually.
I think that it's probably more MTG. But this is hilarious. And the thing is that they're all closeted. Not all of them. I shouldn't say that. But many of them are just unable to come to terms with the fact that they are homosexual and or maybe on some sort of spectrum, as we all are, and they take it out on people, or they like overcompensate by constantly reaffirming these like hierarchies and roles that they're supposed to fulfill.
That's what it means to be a mighty man of valor.
Right.
The in FUBAR, we wrote about that era's anti-gay Republicans. These gay Republicans, there was a couple that were like vehement homophobes. Larry Craig was not, I think, the most egregious. There was a guy named, I think it was Ed Schrock, who was vehement on the floor of the Congress. Vehemently, and then, you know, his Grindr profile showed up or whatever it was at that time, a website. And I think he's no longer in Congress. But it's sort of interesting with people like Benny Johnson's age, for instance. And again, I have no information that he is gay. I've
heard things.
I've only, you know, heard Milo Yiannopoulos, and who sounds like a credible narrator to this. But it's interesting because, like, you know, you see gay Republicans do okay in that space, like Dave Rubin does. Now, of course, he had some trouble when people found out that he was having a kid with his husband.
Yeah.
Or two kids, for that matter. But one wonders, why Benny Johnson couldn't come out of the closet if he were gay. I mean, aside from the fact that, does his reporting rely on his machismo so much?
I think that there's, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze people too much, but I do think that there's a level of, like, you can have, so if you're on some sort of sexual spectrum and you still have some attraction to women, you can just deny those feelings until it becomes a big problem for you, basically.
That's why the term used in like AIDS prevention is men who have sex with men, because
right.
That self-definition is it's really easy for guys apparently to just say I'm not actually gay, that doesn't apply to me, even though I'm regularly having
now,
sex with
I
men.
Remember
100%, yeah.
Steven Crowder's ex-wife, you'll recall, she is a very Christian woman, and Steven Crowder also, I think, projects being very Christian. She once had a tweet that was saying that she believes a lot of men who promote their Christianity so much and their, opposed as a father are gay.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows who she was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I can imagine, a situation where it's not necessarily society. Maybe it's your family. Like if your father's very overbearing and like it was a wrestling coach or something like that, and
right.
Caused you to like lift a lot of weights. And you got to get really big because you've got to project. I'm like a man's man, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got a gun right here on my holster, mm-hmm. Because that's very manly.
Exactly.
I could see how you're running from something in your head.
Yes.
That you're
and when you run from something like that, you do a lot of work to make it so that it's like as bulletproof as possible. So you try to project that into other people, the standards that you are trying to tell yourself in your head over and over again that you have to stand by. There's every incentive if you're on some sort of spectrum and you aren't fully gay. Some people may be, but if you are bisexual or in some way or on the on a sexuality spectrum, to be heteronormative, and that is even more intense with men, and it's even more intense with right wing men.
And then yep. Also, you make a lot of content and drag and drop your nuts on every one of your employees.
Yes. The very heterosexual thing that Steven
Just
Crowder
thinking.
Was doing, pulling out his balls with his male employees and placing it on them all the time.
Oh, were we talking about Steven Crowder?
No,
I was just saying, hypothetically.
That would be an example
of how it pours
of that
out.
Type of behavior. Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
But now that we put it out there, I mean, that's a lot of major right-wing figures in media right now that have at least had rumors about being into men. You got... I mean, or just behavior that might indicate it. You've got Steven Crowder, you got Benny Johnson, you got
Mike Johnson.
You got.
If you want to go on that side of things too?
Yeah, there's some others.
Yeah,
Disproportionate, I think, is the word.
Disproportionate. For instance,
whenever there isn't a rape allegation, you're probably finding a clock.
Right, yeah. It's rapist.
It's either or.
Okay, guys.
Yeah.
Well, we will... we will keep...
This isn't on the sheet if you're looking for it.
No, well, I mean, we're out of time today, I think. We've got... There is tomorrow. It's only Monday, folks. We still have about 40 other of these like type of clips that are just absolutely bat crap crazy. And we'll have to get to them tomorrow. I'll read a couple IMs and then we're gonzo. Big, beautiful Bill Clinton. More to come on and around Benny Johnson, the next TP USA. Gosh. Fig. I just like click on one of these. I don't know what's going to be in there. Fig, I hope if Scott Jennings is there that Emma drags that Nazi.
I will find out who I'm on with shortly. We shall see.
Jonathan Armstead. Matt is right about betting ads in games. It has ruined baseball for me. It's sad because pitchers Emmanuel Clase and Louis Ortiz have been suspended and are facing federal charges for betting against themselves in games by intentionally throwing balls. It's sending a mixed message and should be much more regulated.
They'll make excuses of several like lower level players, but you know, all the people at the top will line their pockets out of, you know, engendering betting addictions in people who just love a sport.
California Resistance, Sam, love the eat each other alive MAGA as the world turns soap opera. MJS617, Sam, for years, Shapiro consistently had some of the most widely shared content on Facebook. Yes. Thing is, back then, with enough cash and determination, you could totally game the system. You have to wonder if the shifting focus to AI slop on Facebook in particular and the overall evolution of social media has taken the shine off of Shapiro's content. In hindsight, I would not be surprised if it turns out that Ben's popularity was a mirage. This man has negative charisma. Yes.
It was always baffling.
Sam knows muted colors. I might be a Sam asexual. All I know is I can't go back to Walmart. Not sure I follow that, but Tim Pool was a victim. Do you think building an entire political ecosystem around a catty reality TV show star might have had some blowback?
Did you see the picture of Trump seeing the watching the Village People last week?
He was so excited.
It's probably the 90th time he's seen that song performed.
I mean,
in person.
Gosh. They're
my Grateful Dead.
He must be keeping that entire band alive. They're still kicking. Exactly. Like, who else is this excited about the Village People?
Get me the Village People.
Even, like, gay men that were into it back in the day are too old to care.
They're basically retired except for when they need to play Trump events.
Yeah.
My favorite's a construction guy. I'm a builder.
Yes. Don't forget the Indian.
I like to drive trucks.
All right, two more. Science is political. There's got to be a lot of new vets who will have PTSD from the war crimes they're being given lawful orders to commit. And the final IM of the day. Elkman. J.D. Vance doesn't smack couches with tennis rackets. He likes to use his bare hands. Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lies, but finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made. The option where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you.
guess somehow I lost my drive. Between the 101 and the 5, do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. The night shifted into you while I shifted into you.